From the City of Angels off the Pacific Ocean, good morning, good evening, wherever you may be across the nation, around the world. I'm George Norrie. Welcome to Coast AM. Next hour, Space Chronicles with Neil deGrasse Tyson. Get ready for that. And a happy birthday to Barbara in Redding, California, or as your friends would say, happy birthday, Schmucky. That's what they call her. Here's what's happening. Well, the big one could be coming to the west coast of the United States. Scientists who are studying the Fukushima earthquake have uncovered data that predicts a big one in the Pacific Northwest, along with the coasts of Washington, Oregon, and British Columbia in Canada. The Fukushima quake was precipitated by what is called the Tohoku area of underwater plates. And an earthquake expert, John Anderson, says the Cascadia subduction zone can be seen as a mirror image of this area. When Anderson compiled ground motion data from the Japanese quake and overlaid it on a map of the Pacific Northwest, which has a similar fault line offshore, the two faults dovetailed almost identically. The Northwest's only nuclear power plant, by the way, is the 28-year-old Columbia Generating Station, which is out in that region. So we shall see. By summer, gasoline prices should reach an all-time high of almost $5 a gallon. They're already $4 a gallon in many places. California, it's already getting close to $5 a gallon. Howard Bloom, the genius of the beast with us. Howard, at what point does this threshold at $5 crush the economy?
Well, there is speculation that the price could go to four times that because there is a burning fuse on Iran's nuclear weapons. And there are two nations that are scared to death of those weapons. One is Israel. We all know about that. The other is Saudi Arabia, which has been involved in a secret war with the Iranians. And those tensions could close off the Persian Gulf. And if there is an attack on Iran, the price of a barrel of gasoline can go up from $120, which it is roughly now, to $200, $300, $400, in which case gasoline will become unaffordable.
And what does that do to everything? I mean, diesel costs go through the roof. Truck drivers can't take their goods to stores. I mean, it's going to have a domino effect, won't it?
It destroys the American economy, and one of the wisest things that George Bush has ever said as president was that we have an addiction to oil. We have to get off of it. You know my solution. It's harvesting solar power in space where it's endless and sending it down to Earth, but that's 30 years off. And right now we have to do everything in our power to end the addiction to oil.
You're going to see what happens. Howard, thanks so much. Howard Bloom. T.J. Lane was charged on six counts, including three counts of aggravated murder related to this week's fatal shooting of three students at an Ohio high school. The prosecutor said the 17-year-old will most likely be tried as an adult. He's got a hearing on March 19th. It's tied to a motion to transfer his case to an adult court. Her tragic situation there. Now, this is not Lane's first brush with the law. According to juvenile records, when he was 15, he was charged with assault for putting his uncle in a chokehold and punching him in the face. Police were called on that. But, you know, even though a number of kids are bullied and pushed around and they've got lousy upbringings, they don't end up killing, they don't end up murdering people. But just to give you a little highlight of this youngster's life, his parents had both been charged with domestic violence against each other, according to court documents. His father served prison time for assaulting a police officer and also was charged with holding a different woman under running water and bashing her head into a wall. So who knows how they treated him. A couple found guilty of murdering a teenager in London. They had accused the teenager of using witchcraft. They have now been found guilty. The Food and Drug Administration has warned patients taking cholesterol-fighting statins that they face a small increase in the risk of higher blood sugar levels and of being diagnosed with diabetes, raising concerns about one of the country's most widely prescribed groups of drugs, a story we had a few days ago here on Coast to Coast AM. Dr. Robin Falca with us to talk about this for a moment. Robin, first of all, with this warning, what does it exactly mean?
Well, they're trying to alert people to the side effects so that it will be, that they'll be more aware, except they've neglected to mention some of the serious ones. But there has been some admission in the latest FDA report about mental fogginess, fuzzy thinking, problems along those lines, and they feel that at this point the threats of liver damage are not as, you know, they're very rare, that shouldn't be a big concern. But there is the risk, definitely, for developing diabetes, and then the risk that they did not mention, which just had me very concerned, George, was that they didn't talk about rhabdomyolysis.
Now, what's that?
Okay, that's a condition where the statins, aside from depleting the body of coenzyme Q10, this is when the skeletal muscle fibers break down, and that breakdown releases a substance called myoglobin. And myoglobin, when it gets into the bloodstream, has to be filtered by the kidneys, and it is very harmful and often causes kidney damage. You know, there are risk factors that can increase that if someone has alcoholism, obviously crush injuries, you know, if the muscle fibers themselves are damaged, heat stroke, seizures. And for the rhabdomyolysis, you have to worry about abnormal urine color, decreased urine production. It would be a darker color, muscle stiffness or aching, muscle tenderness, muscle weakness and fatigue, joint pain.
And Robin, if somebody's on one of these cholesterol-lowering pills, what do? Call their doctor and say, hey, what's this story now about diabetes and all this stuff?
Yeah, they should call, because there are many safe alternatives to using these drugs. Public Citizen Health Research Group has petitioned to remove Crestor from the marketplace. This was updated last year, and you don't really hear much about it, because there are very serious side effects, including what we just discussed, rhabdomyolysis. So the other side effects can be the problems that can cause cardiac arrest, because if not kidney failure, the potassium that's released from the damaged muscle cells can cause a heart attack.
All right, and let me ask you one other quick question. Had a story about sinus nasal washes. A couple deaths. The CDC says do not use tap water. What do you recommend?
Most definitely not. No tap water. I recommend people boil water, and it should be reverse, or they can use reverse osmosis water or distilled water. There are those instances where two deaths occurred from this bizarre amoeba that destroyed brain tissue.
And Robin's website, healthfreedomrights.com. Thank you so much. Celine Dion has begged forgiveness from all her fans after canceling all of her Las Vegas shows until June. Following an examination last week, Dion's doctor diagnosed a weakness in her right vocal cord and prescribed up to 8 weeks of rest. A 95-year-old grandmother terrified her neighbors in China by climbing out of her coffin 6 days after she had died. I kid you not, she was found motionless and not breathing in bed by her neighbor, who kept pushing her. She had tripped, suffered a head injury. When he failed to wake her up, they assumed that she had died, and so they put her in a casket, and off she went. According to tradition, the dead woman was laid in her coffin ahead of the funeral for friends and relatives to pay their respects. The day before the funeral, that neighbor arrived at her house to find the coffin empty, the corpse gone. He was terrified. After searching for the missing body, villagers were stunned to find the old lady sitting in her kitchen cooking. Unbelievable. Up next, someone who cooks all the time, Catherine Austin Fitz. We're going to talk about your pocketbook next on Coast to Coast AM. Well, if you listen to Coast with any regularity, and most of you do, then you know the name Catherine Austin Fitz, former investment banker, former member of HUD, and we turned to her for a number of economic stories. And lo and behold, I went to reach for the phone to get Catherine on, and she wasn't there because she's here. Hi, Catherine. How are you?
Hi, George. It's great to be in the studio.
Last time I saw you, we were in Vancouver at an event.
I know. We had a great time. It was great, great Coast to Coast people there.
Super. I'm going back to Canada in June. I've got a speaking engagement in Toronto. So I'm looking forward to it. You know what? Our Canadian neighbors love this program.
Uh-huh.
They're just superb people.
They do.
And but it's good to have you here. Lots of things going on. I want to talk with you, first of all, Catherine, about something that hits home to a lot of people, and that's the price of gasoline that is creeping up higher and higher. And I can't remember it this high ever in my life.
Right.
Here in California, it's almost $5 a gallon. In Missouri, near St. Louis, it's in, you know, the high threes. It might even be four there by now. What's going on?
Well, there are a couple of things. If you look at the strategic game between us and China, it's what I call the oil card. We have a lot of strategic reasons to keep the oil price high. Mm-hmm. And so if you look at the geopolitics of it, it makes sense. Of course, we know the tensions in the Middle East. And if anything's going to run up oil, it's going to be tensions in the Middle East this year.
Exactly.
So, and I think, you know, if you're a consumer, you need to plan on the on a reasonably good chance that the gas is going to be much, much higher this year.
What's that going to do to the rest of the economy? And what's it going to do to food costs? What's it going to do sale of cars?
It's going to drive everything up, particularly food. If you look across all the tangibles, George, what we're going through is a reset between paper and real things. And that reset's going to continue. And that's why it's very, very important that people position themselves to protect themselves from that reset.
Years ago, Catherine, when gasoline prices would go up, people would simply stay home. Now they don't even have homes to stay in. So what do they do?
Well, and it's a problem because if you look at the price of a home, George, for the last 50 years has tracked bigger and bigger houses, which are more and more expensive to heat. Now, you're out in L.A., but I live usually in Tennessee, and
that gets cold.
So we're really going to have to adjust our whole way of living for higher oil prices and across the board, higher water prices. All tangible things are going to be higher.
I think it's just a matter of time before Israel strikes Iran. I mean, I can feel it. I can sense it. What are people in your circle saying about this?
They think the chances of some kind of action to be very high this year.
Yeah. Sooner than later.
It's, you know, it's always hard to say.
Economically, if that happens, where are we with that? What does that do to the presidential election? Does that throw that up in the air?
I think it is likely to happen in a way that will be good for the presidential election. So, you know, we run a war economy, and we're conditioned on war. Now, you see the Joint Chiefs trying to get unstretched from Afghanistan, trying to get unstretched from Iran. But the reality is if Iran happens, I think it's going to be good for certain interests. So.
All right. So what do you recommend these days for people at home? What should they do?
Well, I think the first thing is to understand that we're going through an enormous change in the economy, George. And, you know, if you look at the stock market, this has been a very good year for the markets. We've opened up strong. And a lot of time the markets are strong in election year. So that's not surprising. But if you look deep into the stock market, what you discover is there's an old world dying and there's a new world birthing. The new technology is having, and you know because you're in the media business, look at what the shift from desktop to handheld has done.
Oh, huge.
Huge. So we're now creating all sorts of new consumer markets globally. It's a combination of globalization and this move from the desktop to the handheld and the pads. And so you're watching enormous creative destruction, and it's very, very important for every household to anticipate, you know, how you're positioned in that thing, both your employment, your income, and your assets. So the world is changing, and we all need to change with it. So that's very, very important. But the other thing is debasement is coming. We're in tax season right now.
Yeah.
For my world, everything in March, we have the corporate taxes, a lot of the corporate filings, and that's where the corporations that are really struggling, the pain comes out. Then in April, of course, we have the individual taxes. And one of the big important things that's going to happen this year, George, is the federal government has been dealing with very significant drops in both corporate and individual taxes. And as they experience those drops, we get higher and higher deficits. And the resolution of that's going to be pushed off after the election. But come 2014, we're going to face that. And one of the ways that's going to hit is in debasement, because somebody's going to have to print money. And what we've been watching now for 10 years is tremendous debasement of the dollar. And that's part of what's driving everybody household expenses up. It's going to continue, George.
I would say the Fed will print more money if it has to.
The Fed is printing more money as we speak. And people always say to me, could my gold be confiscated? You know, if you look at what debasement is doing, it's confiscating our wealth right now. It's
chipping away at it.
Very chipping away. So one of the things we all have to be prepared for is inflation of our everyday expenses. So anything you can do to bring down your overhead, to bring down your debt is unbelievably important. And to make sure your income is coming from those parts of the economy that are growing and not dropping.
We're not going to have a total collapse. We'll have some industries that do very well, like you just said.
Yeah. You have industries right now that are doing very, very well. So it's a, you know, old world to dying, new world birthing. Now, what many people are struggling with is that process was delayed by the housing bubble and the debt bubble.
Right.
You know, we put off the day of reckoning by having a bubble. And, of course, the collapse of the bubble makes it harder and tougher.
Well, you know, here we are. We're in an economy that is just, you know, weak, just very weak. And, you know, it has glimpses of coming back, but it doesn't. It can't take a rabid punch like this.
The great mystery is life goes on, George. So the punch will come, and if you look at how the punch will come, it will be hard on household wallets. At the same time, the geopolitics of America continuing to checkmate China is going to be good for the overall economics. So there's a...
As buyers, consumers, you mean?
Well, my gas price goes on, but at the same time, America being dominant geopolitically means the value of the dollar stays high. Mm-hmm. The dollar stays the reserve currency, and everybody in America has financially benefited and continues to benefit from the dollar being the reserve currency.
We have talked about who's to blame here. You know, I've talked about Wall Street. You've talked about government. Maybe both?
Well, there are a couple things going on, but I think the most important thing is we have a group of people who are centralizing political and economic control. And they're doing it in a way that I think many of us find it completely or very, very unattractive, because you're watching the reduction of political participation and political power on the part of the average person. Now, many people think, well, that's being replaced by my consumer power, but we're clearly going to a world where there's centralization of wealth. And I think that's very uncomfortable for people in America who've enjoyed a broad middle class. Now, with that is coming globalization. And of course, that opens up all new worlds, all new kinds of opportunities for many, many people. So there's good and there's bad in it. But I think the centralization is very, very uncomfortable.
What are we doing about the housing mess? Is that being fixed?
No. The housing mix, in 1989, when the last housing bubble burst, we had a clearing. We marked to market and we cleared the market and we got on down the road. We're not marking to market. We're simply constantly pumping up the portfolios and the bank continues to, you know, and the mortgage service continues to be.
But they're still foreclosing, aren't they?
They're still foreclosing, but the games that are going on, George, are just... You know, the consumer in the housing area is being treated worse than, you know, I hate to say dirt, but it's just the fraudulent and criminal behavior is just
still.
I mean, we've had the fraudulent inducement of America, and now the servicers continue the sort of pain. So it's a very ugly picture, and we haven't marked to market. We haven't cleared the market. There's so many things that could be done to create liquidity on Main Street. It's not happening for a whole variety of reasons. This is one of it. So the paper has stayed in the banks or that's been purchased by the Federal Reserve, and the Federal Reserve continues to finance it at low rates so that the banks can essentially finance at very inexpensive rates. But the average American who needs to refinance their mortgage can't refinance it because the terms and conditions have changed or the mortgages are underwater. We just had one article today saying over 60% of the mortgages in Nevada are underwater.
60%?
Can you imagine?
And there's not enough money to bail those people out.
Well, part of it is, you know, real estate has no value if the people in it don't have income.
That's right. It doesn't mean anything.
It doesn't mean anything. And if you look at the drops in income both to American households and American government, it's enormous. And we need to reinvent our, you know, we need to re-engineer the whole infrastructure for that drop in cash flow.
And it's got to happen fast. Well, stay with us. Catherine Austin Fitz with us, and we're going to take your phone calls with her when we turn around the corner and come right back on Coast to Coast AM. Her website linked up at coasttocoastam.com. Solari, S-O-L-A-R-I.com. I'm George Norrie, and we'll be right back. And welcome back. Catherine Austin Fitz with us. We're going to come right back and take phone calls as we talk about the economy, what you're going to do about your financial future. You know, Catherine, just listening to that paid advertisement, political ad, this is going to be an interesting presidential year. I still don't know what's going to happen.
I don't think it matters.
Really?
Yeah. Yeah, it's the old red button problem. Whoever wins is going to get into the Oval Office, and he's going to, his political guy is going to say, okay, the Americans spent $1 billion to get you elected. They want their check. And he's going to turn to the Secretary of the Treasury and he says, you're going to have to be nice to the people who control, you know, all the dirty money, because we need to finance the deficit. I mean, if the deficit is going up every year. We have tax revenues down and unemployment, Social Security, military going up. And so you've got a very fragile empire. You've got a government that doesn't have financial sovereignty. And so whoever walks into that office is going to find themselves in that bind. And there's no way to get out of that bind in the Oval Office. You've got to do it one county at a time.
Well, and it seems like they just keep pushing the problems onto the next administration.
Right.
That pushes them along to the next administration.
Right. Mañana, mañana.
Nobody wants to just, you know, bite the bullet, do what you have to do right now.
Well, you know, politically that's hard. If you look at popular opinion, there's no constituency to bite the bullet.
No.
Yeah.
No, nobody wants to accept the fact that you're going to say to them, folks, I'm going to clean this up for the future. It's going to be bad right now, and it's going to hurt you, but in 10 or 20 years from now, it'll be glorious for them, thanks
right,
to us.
That's why we're watching debasement. So I can't build a political constituency to balance the budget, but I can build a political constituency of me and the central bank to just debase the currency. So you're financing this, and you're resolving the financial tensions by debasement, debasement, debasement. And that's why John Williams at Shadow Stats just had a new inflation report. He shows inflation running at 6% and consumer inflation running at 10%. So, you know, George, I've done the statistics several times, but from 2003 on, the purchasing power of most Americans, most dollars, has fallen more than 50%.
Yeah.
So that's how they're financing it. And of course, it's very painful because the even though you're increasing the money supply, a lot of that liquidity is not going to Main Street. So Main Street is experiencing falling income and rising expenses. I call that the slow burn. And this debasement is what's eating us alive. So it comes back around and in a much more sneaky way. You know, the budget is balanced in this way, sort of behind the scenes. It's not just happening to Americans, it's global, because that's how we're financing a global empire. It's a global taxation system through the balance sheet. We print money everybody has to take, and then it goes down in value 5% every year.
Okay, back to the phones now. Let's go to our first-time caller, Steve in Dallas, Texas. Steve, good morning. You're on with Catherine. Go ahead.
How are you doing? I'm just wondering if your guest or you understand that the spot market price on oil is not what the gas companies pay. The gas companies, especially the ones I know in the Southern Gulf, they buy tens of millions of barrels of gasoline on a purchase order, and they'll take delivery on those barrels anywhere up to 6 months later.
Right.
And the people I talk to, they haven't paid over $50 a barrel in 7 years.
Right.
Now, why people don't understand this, but the $106 market price or spot market price you're talking about is only there to establish a retail price. That's all it's for.
Right.
And what a nice retail price it is.
Right. It's an excellent point. It's an excellent point because if you look at particularly for the big oils, if you look at their finding costs over the last 10 years, George, there is no rationale to describe the difference between the finding cost and the cost at the pump. I think one of my favorite books on the oil market, Jim Norman's Oil Card, published about 5 years ago, estimated at the time that Exxon's finding cost was $4 a barrel. So
that's it.
Oh, yeah. No, we're watching enormous, enormous differential between what we pay at the pump and what the finding costs are.
You know, Catherine, I happen to be an abiotic oil believer. I think this planet has an abundance of it. Doesn't necessarily mean we should be using it or burning it, but I do believe that it's here. And, you know, we've got in this country alone untapped billions of barrels
of oil. Let's go back, because you know I'm a financial person. Let's talk about control. If you're going to control the global currency, then you need to control not just
your oil,
the central banks and the military, but you need to control the trade in a critical asset.
That's
so
right.
It's essential that dependency on oil continue, and you continue to keep that price inflated to manage the currency, because it's not just about oil, it's about the whole financial system. One of my theories is the reason they're trying to get such tight control over the seed and food supply is if you're going to roll out a global currency, oil's not going to do it. You need something much more powerful, and I think you're right. I think if you look at what's really going with oil and the real finding costs and what could happen with technology, there's no way oil can go the distance. So the question is, what's going to be the asset that keeps giving the same powers that be that kind of control? But I don't think the price of oil is about the finding cost of oil. I think it's about control.
Let's go to Oklahoma. Robin's with us, east of the Rockies. Robin, go ahead.
Hi, George. Hi, Kathy. How you doing?
Hi.
I wanted to know, can they foreclose on a mortgage even if you're paying? And just because they might think you're just not a good risk? And if so, do we need to be putting money back? We're both on disability, and I don't get all mine because it's not supposed to go to a certain level, and I've been trying to put back because my teeth are bad.
Mm-hmm.
And I mean, what we're living on is like maybe a little above poverty level,
right?
Maybe
every situation is different. Every situation is unique, so I hate to generalize, but I will tell you, we've had situations across the country where people foreclose, even if you're paying the mortgage. We had one guy get foreclosed on who didn't have a mortgage. And I think you had that story on your site, George. I will tell you, just to share my experience, I did a new mortgage several years ago, and that mortgage has been traded 5 or 6 times, and every time they trade it, they try and default me. And it's like a war game. So you have to be very, very careful. It depends on whether who your servicer is, if the mortgage was securitized or not, but I would be impeccable in your payments and impeccable with your records and take personal responsibility to track and make sure the payments are correct and everything else. You cannot assume that the servicer is honest or is trustworthy.
No, at all. Jeff in Hutchinson, Kansas. Hey, Jeff, thanks for calling. Go ahead.
Hey, well, I'm another disabled person since 2003. And I had 2 small student loans that were both under $10,000 to begin with, anyway. And I thought that I had applied for hardship, and I thought that had been accepted because I got a letter saying it was many years ago, which I, of course, lost somehow. And but about 3 weeks ago, I got a call all of a sudden out of nowhere from a collection agency saying they were wanting to collect on the student loans that I have. And I said, well, if you go to my credit report, it still shows 2 loans, but it says 0 balance. And according to my president of my local credit union, a friend of mine, that means that I don't owe them anything because it shows 0. And I told the lady this on the phone. Of course, she differed with me. Since then, I've gotten some papers from them saying I can fill it out, and they'll tell me how much I owe, but I should know anything. I can't figure out why somebody's attacking me on the phone now.
Was it a sold note?
You have to be very, very careful. What you need to do is they are required to present documentation to you as to what you owe and why you owe it. And what you're going to have to do is go back and duplicate your records and make sure that you can prove that you don't owe anything. But I would be very careful. And again, you can never, ever assume that their intention, you know, that they're not being fraudulent. So it's going to, you know, in these cases, it generally takes a lot of time and work. But do everything you can to document that you don't owe them anything.
Catherine, what's going to happen when the health care bill takes over?
Oh, George, I can't imagine.
What a mess.
I'm opposed to the health care bill.
That's
got to
be repealed. Somebody's got to repeal it.
Well, you know, here's the amazing thing. If you look at the deficit, we can't afford health care the way it exists now. So how that's going to, you know, to me, the health care bill is more about tyranny than it is about health care. So I'm very opposed to the health care bill. But I think, you know, if you look at the revenues falling to the federal government, that the acceleration of the inflation coming from debasement, and then you look at what is predicted to come in terms of costs, exploding costs for Medicare, Medicaid, and all health care, something's got to give. We need literally to reinvent our paradigm about how we're going to do health, and we have to invest much more in preventative care than in the back end, because the back end is killing us.
Yeah. Okay, let's go to Greensboro, North Carolina. Hey, Bill, thank you for calling. Go ahead.
Hi there. Thank you.
Sure,
I have a question for Catherine. About a year ago, I asked my bank if they would give me probably a short-term loan backed by gold, secured loan, and they didn't want to do it. So after a while, they said, yeah, they would do it for 12.75%.
It's pretty high when it's your own money you're borrowing, basically.
Well, yeah, and they took, you know, one of the bailout loans, too, or whatever it's called.
What collateralization were they requiring? What percent of the loan?
1.75, and I told them I'd back it with Cougarands, gold Cougarands. You know, they could keep in their vault or whatever.
But what was the loan to value on the collateral?
Dollar for dollar.
Oh,
if you're going
to
borrow
work, so I was undecided for about maybe $3,000-$4,000, something like that.
But in other words, were you putting up more gold than you were getting in your loan? Because normally in a situation like that,
I'm willing to do that. Yeah.
Yeah, gold is so volatile. So say if you can get a 20% to 25% correction in the most volatile period, if you were willing to post 130%, you know, value to your loan, they should be giving you a very competitive rate.
Right. Absolutely. Now, what if he only wanted to put up 50% and borrow 100%?
That gets tougher because you're really coming down to your credit.
It's almost an unsecured loan then.
Yeah, so if you're looking at the rate, you go from a very secure rate to an unsecure rate. Now, part of the problem, George, is if you look at the banks, even though, as I said, the Fed is printing money and there's a lot more money in the system, they're not the banks are not lending because the banks are being encouraged to lend to government. They're being encouraged to leave the money in the investment portfolios and send it back to Washington. And so what you're seeing is a lot of households and a lot of small business who are very creditworthy just can't get loans. And so even though the general liquidity in the system is driving up our expenses, the liquidity on Main Street is really, really shrinking. And so your story, Bill, does not surprise me.
A few more calls here. Roger in Shingleton, California. Welcome to the show, Roger. It's your turn. Go ahead.
Hi, George.
Hey, Roger. What's up?
I'm calling about the price of hay. I live in far northern California by the Oregon border near Mount Lassen.
Is that going up too?
Yep.
Oh, man.
Oh.
I have a question for Catherine, too, about the fact that Congress evidently passed a bill that says that the farmers can now sell directly to China. And that's impacted us greatly because our farmers, the agribusiness farmers in the area, are selling their hay to China at $50 a bale. And that's caused a crisis that the dairies have now stocked up, and they bought every bale of hay they could get at $30 a bale, and or probably less. And now, you know, people like me who have goats that we have to feed, and, you know, because we use the milk and it's a big part of our life, you know, my hay is like about $18 to $20 a bale right now. For alfalfa, it's $20, and for wheat or grass, it's $18.
I had a horse farm back about 20 years ago. I think it was like $3 a bale.
Well, hay could be in a real squeeze this year, George. It's not just because of the global, you know, sort of the global competition for food, and we are becoming, you know, we're the breadbasket to the world, but drought. You're watching significant water problems in a variety.
Can you buy futures of hay?
I'm sure you can. I've never traded the futures.
That might be a great investment.
Well,
last year we had plenty of water. I mean, we had so much water it was destroying some of the hay in the fields here in California. So, you know, the droughts weren't an issue. We had plenty of hay. It's just that there's a bit of a panic with it. Milk is just going to go skyrocket. When those people run out of hay in the barns and a lot of the hay is going overseas, milk is going to be more expensive than gasoline. So, you know,
food,
it's getting scary.
The one thing that everyone should be very focused on is the rising price of food and water. We just had Seattle announce the first public landscaping of an edible forest. And this, George, is a town in England that's done this.
What is this?
You replant, it came out of a permaculture work group, very exciting. You replant the public spaces to be literally to produce food.
Like gardens.
Right. And the citizens who need the food as they're walking home, they just, you know, they take the plum off the tree.
Or grab a tomato.
Yeah, exactly.
It's free.
Right. And if you look at all the public spaces and land in this country and all the landscaping, if we redid it for edible forests, that's going to happen because if you look at what's happening with the price of food, and it's not just the price of food that we need to be concerned about, it's the quality as well. So get ready to learn how to garden because that's going to be, food is going to become the real luxury of the 21st century.
Tom is in Riverside, California. Go ahead, Tom.
Hi, George. Hey. Hi, Catherine.
Hi.
I just wanted to ask, there's a lot of gloom and doom, you know, involved here, but I feel that the country is more or less being maneuvered. This is not somebody screwed up somewhere in the back of the office. this is something that's being maneuvered and pushed, and we're going to end up in a situation where we're going to be compromised in this country, or that's how I think the Constitution is going to be taken out of our hands and tore up, because we're going to be in a situation where you simply don't have any choice financially on an individual basis but to capitulate. But I wanted to ask you basically what if there was, if the government was accountable, which I don't think it is on any level, but if it was accountable, what would be the road? I'm thinking maybe drill. I don't see any reason in my mind, if I was an American, if I had a president that I could elect, maybe Clint Eastwood, for instance, Donald Trump, Sarah Palin, some of these people, Arnold Schwarzenegger, maybe, throw those guys in as a coalition, and they all have enormous resources.
All right, we're almost out of time. Everybody,
okay. So my fantasy is that in every county in America, people get together and they get a hold of the consolidated financial accounts, and they look at the sources and uses of federal government and local, state and local government money in their place, and discover all the games that if they turn around can make them money, can generate income for small businesses locally, can create employment. Let me give you a perfect example. If I call up the food stamp hotline in my state, George, you know who I get? I get somebody in India working for JPMorgan Chase.
Exactly. I talked to one of those
job,
today.
Doing a job that we could do in Tennessee. So we are paying twice for something. You know, I used to always run into places where HUD was spending $250,000 per unit to build housing where $50,000 would buy and rehab a single family home.
I got one of those calls from India today and they wanted my Social Security. I said, nah.
No, I don't think so.
Catherine, we're out of time. I'll see you Saturday at the Health Expo. You're on.
Looking forward to it, George. Thank you so much.
All right. You be well. I'll be back in a moment as we talk Space Chronicles on Coast to Coast AM.